Hey guys, it's Payne. I'm really excited to introduce a brand new show to Bet the Board that combines sports and alternative investing, the very first of its kind. Sports betting and collectibles converging is inevitable. Let me tell you why. Sports cards and memorabilia are another way to get money into the market and do it without limit restrictions or the substantial hold you're accustomed to with sports betting. Whether you collected cards as a kid and are looking to get back into the hobby, this podcast is for you. If you've been collecting cards for years, this podcast will make you think and operate more efficiently. Are you in real estate? The parallels to investing in sports cards and memorabilia are uncanny. You're on Wall Street? Well, listen close. The best sports cards have outperformed the S&P 500 by 6x since 2013. And during the 2008 market crash, sports cards held up better than the S&P 500. Bet the Board, in conjunction with PWCC, presents Cardboard Chat, an entertaining, sophisticated, and informative podcast that combines sports, analytics, betting, cards, and memorabilia. Without further ado, this is Cardboard Chat with Jesse Craig, a leading figure in the collectible space, and me, Payne. So we received a lot of emails and messages about last week's show, and people wanted more on how to start collecting sports cards. Is it buying singles, specific sectors within the market to collect, whether vintage, 90s inserts, or only wanting game news when thinking about relics? Now, Jesse, we're doing at least 30 episodes of Cardboard Chat. Every week, the intro aims to be informative, but we will have our regularly scheduled segments people seem to love, so we're not going to spend 90 minutes telling you why a one of one is rare or why ripping wax long term is probably negative expectation. But I do think it makes sense to expound on last week, and the best way to do that is maybe by helping collectors figure out what they want to do in this market. Do you want to be a collector? Do you want to be an investor? Or maybe a little of both?
Yeah, well, I think that's a key thing to try to determine, right? Like, what are you looking to get out of this? And, you know, I thought we alluded to this a little bit in the beginning of the last pod, but maybe we just kind of missed the boat. But, you know, as a collector, you can buy things that you're passionate about. And, you know, I think I mentioned a player, a team, you know, whatever it may be, there's less research, there's less analytics that go into that than an investor would have. If you're an investor, you're looking to, you know, you're looking for ROI. It's not a passion play. It's not an entertainment play. So, you know, looking yourself in the mirror and figuring out exactly who you are first, I think, is the most important thing. From a collector's perspective, yeah, you can just enjoy the trading cards. It's a hobby, right? At the root of all of this, it's a hobby. And it's something that if you're not looking for an ROI and not looking for a return, then making a decision on what you're going to buy is much easier. So let's talk about, you know, collecting. And, you know, with that, I think that there's some tidbits that you could take even from our other podcasts that we've done, where we've talked about, you know, on-card autos versus sticker autos, and how, you know, on-card autos are, you know, much more desirable, how game use patches are much more desirable than factory produced. You know, we've talked about the risks of modern versus the risks of vintage. And, you know, I think there's a lot of things that if you've listened to the first three, you can get bits and pieces from there. But, you know, we gave the informative website last week to go check it out and do a little deep dive. There's no snap your fingers and make money in this space. I'm not going to sit here and go buy LeBron. Go buy LeBron. Go buy any LeBron. Like, that doesn't work like that. That's just not how our space is designed. So you got to do a little bit of research, and there's a little bit of work. And you alluded to the 10,000 hours, and you alluded to how long it took you to figure out exactly, you know, what part of this market you wanted to dive into. So I don't want to sit here and pretend like we have all the answers to what X individual should invest in or collect, because we don't.
I think that's a great point. And I shared my experience because that's the only experience I have. And I'm sure yours is different, and everyone else in this space is kind of gone down a different path. And I did mention the theory of 10,000 hours. And then I mentioned how I stumbled upon a YouTube video in 2015, but didn't make my first purchase until 2016. So I didn't ask other people for answers to the test. I wasn't looking for advice on how to get rich quick. I was able to identify players and sets I liked that I was excited about collecting. And when you do that, I think there's room to be both a collector and an investor. But I think the first part's a little more important, right? If you're a collector and love the players and cards you're buying, you're going to be able to handle the inevitable ebbs and flows of market conditions, right?
Sure.
And if you're listening to the podcast and you're like, you know, how do I make money fast? And you just start splashing money around, the moment these cards dip 15% in a tough market, you're going to sell at a loss. You're going to panic. And you're going to have a negative taste in your mouth, and you're going to leave this space. I could have easily spent every single cent on Michael Jordan when I started because that was obvious. That's the safe play. That's the best stock you can probably buy. And I have some of that. But I also love Derek Jeter, which you spilled the beans on in the introductory podcast. And so I've been able to collect what I like while realizing I can earn with that specific player. So it's the best of both worlds for me. And I would suggest finding what player does that for you. I can't tell you what your favorite thing to collect is. And that's why we said research. Find out what your passion is. Is it vintage? Is it something your grandfather used to collect that you thought was interesting? Is it a 90s insert? Is it a picture that you saw on Instagram that someone posted and you're like, shit, that set or that card is awesome. I want to collect that. And ultimately, you have to go down your own path.
100%. And also, there's different price points, right? Like, everybody listening to this is going to have a different price point that they're looking at for what they're willing to, let's just say, allocate on a monthly basis if they want to get into trading cards. So that is a layer as well. Now, if you want to generalize it and you want a little tidbit from me, well, if you were looking for shorter term, because the people that are going to complain about, you know, potentially what to buy right now are generally people that want to flip. This is a difficult flipping market. Let's just be completely frank here.
Yep, absolutely.
The economy's tough. Cards have seen a pullback for some of the more volatile stuff in the last, you know, 90 to 120 days. But if you're looking for something that you have the potential to flip, you have to be prospecting. It is high risk, high reward. I would look at players that could have a potentially huge season this year, whether it's an MVP, whether it's a Super Bowl or a championship. I would look at investing in those guys, and you're probably going to want to sell before that championship is done, before they actually win that. So you buy now, sell when the hype's high. So I would look at cards of theirs. Let's just say, I'll use Luka as an example. Let's say that you think Luka is the best thing since sliced bread, which in my opinion, he is unbelievable. I don't know how a guy that looks, you know, as chubby as he does, gets by all these amazing athletes in the NBA. It's absolutely beyond me. I still don't understand it. It is so impressive.
He's 10 years older than the birth certificate.
Yeah. but Luka is incredible. And he's almost averaging a triple-double to start the year. He's scored over 30 points in every game. The Mavericks look okay. They don't look great yet. Now it's early. It's really early. But if you think they're going to win the championship, if you think Luka's going to win an MVP, I would look at cards of Luka's that have gone down significantly in the last 90 days because there are cards of his that have gone down. Take a look at those. Maybe we're at the bottom. Maybe we're not. Like I said, I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball, but I would look at the trajectory of these cards, what has gone down, if there's a buying opportunity, if you believe in a specific player and you want to flip it. But keep in mind, high risk, high reward. There is a chance that still goes down if he doesn't perform well, right?
Right.
Or pick a guy that nobody's thinking about. Say Scotty Barnes on the Raptors. Let's say you're big on Barnes. Well, okay, get his cards, buy him now, and if he ends up having a monster season, maybe there's some ROI potential for you if you believe in that team, if you believe in that player. So there's different plays that you can make, but if someone's looking for a quick flip, which, like I said, generally people that are asking for the answers now are people that don't want to put the time and the energy into researching something, which is fine. Look, I'm an impatient person too. I get it. you know, it's totally natural to feel that way. The problem is, though, we just don't have the right answers. It's not like the stock market where I'd say, oh, yeah, I believe in Walmart. Go buy this blue chip stock. And then I think it's going to go up for whatever reason. You can't do that in this market.
The good thing about this conversation is we're wildly different in some of our approaches. And I think I'm a guy who likes to hit singles and doubles. I'm a guy that has no problem holding a little bit longer. I think there's some outside market conditions which can potentially change over the next handful of months. And right now, to your point, I think you can do the out of sight, out of mind thing. And I'm not saying a guy like Josh Allen can't increase in some of his cards potential if they were to go on and win a Super Bowl. But Everyone in the world just watched the Buffalo Bills beat the Green Bay Packers last night. Their first instinct Monday morning is to go on to PWCC or whatever buying platform it is and go buy some Josh Allen. Again, I'm more of an out of sight, out of mind guy. So I think there's potential now to maybe buy some vintage baseball cards or baseball cards that are a little bit devalued with the current market and the focus on football and basketball. And I'm not saying this, but it's just something that I'm most comfortable with. There's a lot of good buys out there right now on someone like Derek Jeter, who you don't have to worry about getting hurt. You don't have to worry about any of the garbage that goes along with that. And so that's where I think there's probably some value right now in that vintage market in baseball, because it's out of season. And if you get some interesting news in terms of other markets based upon ancillary factors, then come March and April, when you typically see that surge in the baseball market and you're a flipper, maybe that's when you can cash in a little bit.
And look, I'm more risk adverse, so I love vintage too. But even talking about, you know, baseball, modern baseball, you know, baseball is basically done, right? The players outside of the Phillies and the Astros, anybody on any other team, they're not active. And so, you know, buy that up and think about maybe dumping those in the spring, and you can, you know, chances are in our market, you can make 15 to 20% on those assets. And that's typically how it works. It's fairly cyclical. So yeah,
if Acuna or Soto are your guy and you're willing to make, you know, 15 to 20%, that might be the time, right? Pick up some Acuna and Soto on the low, and come March and April, when baseball is got the fever and everyone's into that sport right there, then maybe you can flip. But I'm typically not a flipper, so this is a conversation that's probably a little above my pay grade, but I know you guys talk to a bunch of collectors, and that's probably the vibe you're getting from them.
Well, yeah, it depends on the individual. Some people like to, you know, look, there's entertainment out of buying and selling. So some people like to do it just because it's, you know, quote unquote action, you know, that's why we have flippers in this space. Now, if you're looking for a longer ROI, well, then you need to be ready to buy some vintage and buy those blue chips. But the moral of the story, to wrap up, you know, the intro to this pod, is that there's just no right answer. And, you know, by listening to this podcast more and more, you're going to get little pieces of information here and there that you can apply to whatever strategy and whatever risk tolerance that you want as a collector or investor. But we just don't have all the answers.
I referenced some vintage cards. Now it's time to talk about two of them.
Let's go, let's go, let's go. It's time, folks. That's right. We're going to discuss undervalued and overvalued cards, or maybe even some memorabilia assets, potentially some players. Is it time to buy, sell, or hold on to these assets or players? We'll give you some opinions and back it up.
Two cards that we're going to talk about that we both believe are a little undervalued, potentially keeping up with the theme of the intro. And I'm going to let you start. The first is a 1961 Fleer Oscar Robinson rookie card.
I love this set in general. So what's interesting about basketball cards, 1948 Bowman was the first major release for basketball cards. That is George Mikan's rookie. And then there wasn't another release until 1957 Tops, which is Bill Russell and Cousy. And then you've got 1961 Fleer. And 1961 Fleer is an amazing set because of who's in it. You have Wilt Chamberlain's rookie, Jerry West's rookie, Oscar Robertson's rookie, Elgin Baylor's rookie. So there are monster rookie cards in this 1961 Fleer set. That's what makes it my favorite set in all of trading cards. Is you have so many different key guys that are in this set to go after. And you look at a guy like Oscar Robertson. You know, I just don't feel like he's appreciated as much as he should be. He was the MVP in 1964. He's won an NBA championship. He's a 12-time All-Star. He's a 9-time NBA first team. Now, to give some context, that sounds like, oh, that's a decent amount. There's only 10 players in NBA history who have more. You're talking about LeBron, Kobe, Kareem, Duncan, Jerry West, Michael Jordan. There's a few more on that list. The other guys that have 9, Bird and Magic. Chamberlain
only
has...
Those guys are good.
Those guys are pretty decent at basketball, yeah. Chamberlain only has 7. Bill Russell only had 3. So if you think about what it takes from a consistency perspective, to be a 9-time NBA all first team, it takes a lot. It's pretty incredible. I mean, he's in the NBA Hall of Fame, the FIBA Hall of Fame, the College Basketball Hall of Fame. I mean, Oscar Robertson was a triple-double machine. You know, then also in the set, what's interesting is I'm talking about the main card in the set, which is card number 36. And what's cool about 61 Fleer is there's a portrait variation, which is what we're talking about now, where, you know, it's kind of, you know, half the card is a picture of the player. And then there's what's called an in-action card as well in the set. And those are, you can get for a fraction of what the quote-unquote more portrait cards are worth. So I actually like those cards as an undervalued card as well within this own set. But, you know, you've got a guy who's got his jersey retired by two teams, and he has this list of accomplishments that I've mentioned, and yet you can pick up, you know, his trading cards for a fraction of what you can pick up a Wilt Chamberlain, for example.
You referenced 48 Bowman. This is the 1961 Fleer. We have the 1986 Fleer. You can transition to 2003 exquisite, 97 metal, you know, precious metal gems. Like, these are the iconic basketball sets. And with that, you have this slew of players. You mentioned Wilt Chamberlain, Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, but specific to Wilt Chamberlain, you have a brand that's going to help the other cards within this set. And we talked about it on the last show, right? If Wilt Chamberlain sells for X, West and Oscar have to sell for Y. So anytime Wilt Chamberlain sets a new record, you're going to see a push to the other key rookies within this 1961 Fleer basketball set. So I absolutely love it. I think the photography is great. You have that classic look, but you mentioned some of the in-action photos as well, as I kind of reference them as a parallel within the set. Mm-hmm. And if you're just a collector, right? And I think that's also maybe a good synergy to the top of the show. If you're a collector and you don't have the bankroll to potentially go and get the base version, it's a nice alternative going with the in-action photo.
100%. And, you know, the last thing that I'll leave you with for Oscar is he's still alive. So, you know, he's in his 80s. He's going to pass away, obviously, eventually. And when he does, that, you know, brings the awareness back to a significant player like this. And usually you see an uptick in pricing. So that is always something to keep in mind, is, you know, relevancy. And when is the public going to notice this player again from a vintage card perspective? And there's certain events that can make that happen. And death is definitely one of them. So it's just another thing to think about from an ROI down the road, as a long-term hold. It's vintage. Remember, steady ROI. That's why I really think this card is undervalued.
The last time Oscar's name was in the news in a big way relating to basketball, it was when Russell Westbrook was going for his triple-double record. Hopefully, and to this point, I think we know the way Russell Westbrook is being treated. hopefully there's no negativity towards Oscar. Obviously, Oscar's basketball career has been absolutely iconic and epic. Now, the card that I'm looking at that's a little undervalued, I sent it to you. You had to do a double take. You then sent me a text like, are you sure you didn't mean this? And I'm going to go with something a little off the radar. It's the 1964 Topps Pete Rose All-Star Rookie and a PSA 8.5. And what I like about this is it's iconic and it's both rare. Just 35 copies are graded higher than PSA 8.5. There's no 10s. You can get this for roughly $5,500. It's been flat for the last 12 to 14 months, while most of the market has decreased. And I think when you find assets that hold their value in a down market, that's one signal you have a solid asset poised to increase and has growth potential when the market does rebound. I think you're also buying at a good time for baseball in general, which we talked about at the top, middle of football season, right? The largest American sport, basketball is underway, holiday season's around the corner, and people don't have as much discretionary income. March and April is typically when you see baseball pricing surge a bit, but diving a little bit deeper into the specific card, the 1964 Topps Pete Rose and Pete Rose's brand. 1964 is just him on the card. It's your traditional Topps card compared to his 1963 rookie, which has three other players on the card. It looks like four floating heads. 64, right, still has that classic rookie cup we all love as collectors. But what's really interesting about this card for me, and I'm probably going too far into the weeds, the reason we're doing this podcast is because we believe there's a natural synergy between sports bettors and card collectors. And I fully believe once Pete Rose has passed, he's going to be inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. He's still being punished, But with the legalization of sports betting and sports books partnering with leagues and teams and betting becoming more accepted, you cannot leave out the all-time hits leader out of the Hall of Fame for something that's now widely accepted. And I also think there's a void in the market where sometimes the second-year card needs to be worth a higher percentage of the rookie card. And I think as we get a little bit smarter, as this market evolves, people are going to realize that. And eventually, Pete Rose's induction will increase his prices and then also trigger a market increase, because we've seen, right, sometimes with set collectors, sometimes with registry collectors, once you get into the Hall of Fame, that's now a card you need to add to the registry, creates a little bit more demand in the market. I think this one is a very nice price point that has some long-term ROI, especially when we see a little bit better evolution in this market and people smarten up a little bit.
Yeah, it is true that when you sent me that, I thought you had a typo when you meant his 63 rookie. So I did have to clarify. But then, you know, you start looking at it, and I get it. The 63 rookie, you're right, it has multiple people on it. It's, which in our space, second-year cards in general, I think, are an interesting thing to look at from an investability standpoint, right? Like you said, you can get them for a fraction of the cost of you know, their rookie cards, which in this case, from the 63 to the 64, it's about a 4 to 5x delta that you can, you know, you're saving yourself a ton of money by going for a 64 tops. And it's a vertical card that is an individual image of Pete Rose. Like you mentioned, it has the all-star, you know, cup signia on it that we all love. It's no dissimilar to the 80 tops basketball that has Larry Bird and Magic Johnson and Dr. J on it. And then their first year individual cards is 81 tops. So, you know, when you're looking at the greatest hitter of all time, you know, look, is he going to make the Hall of Fame when he dies? I don't know. I'd hope so. I think it's crazy that he's not in there, because correct me if I'm wrong.
Feels like they're punishing him right now still.
Well, yeah, but correct me if I'm wrong, but he never bet on his own team, did he?
That was the claim. And then,
okay,
then I think he said something to the effect of, when I was a manager, I did. I don't know. Okay. The reality,
as long as he never bet on his team to lose, that's all I care about.
Yeah, go out there and bet on yourself to get four hits. And then when you get the four hits, right? Perfect for everybody.
Exactly. So I really don't mind it that much. Like, oh, you bet on yourself as a person to win? Yeah, you should. You should, if you're a professional athlete, you're damn right you should be betting on yourself to win in anything. So as long as he didn't bet on himself to lose, I have no issue with it, to be completely frank. And I think it is a shame that he's not in the Hall of Fame. And, you know, as a person, he's a pretty funny guy. You know, he does a lot of signings. I'm not sure how familiar you are with that. But, you know, there's times when you can get him to basically write anything you want on a ball. So I have seen balls that say, you know, Pete Rose, like, I killed Osama bin Laden. You know, basically, you know, whatever you want to put on there, he'll put on there. So the guy's got a sense of humor, which I love. You know, all-time hits leader, 17-time All-Star, 3-time World Series champion. He was the NL MVP once. He's got a couple gold gloves. I mean, we're talking about, you know, you take all the gambling stuff away, you strip that away, you can make an argument he's a top 10 all-time player.
I don't think there's any debating that. And you just listed some of Pete Rose's key numbers. Now it's time for a segment that divulges lots of numbers.
Pick a number, any number, whatever it may be. We got a number inside, but we want a magic number, all right? This is where we're going to pick a few big cards that enter in an auction over the next couple of days, and we're going to try and guess how much they sell for in advance. Throw out a number. We got one, too.
All right, this is becoming the most appreciated segment, apparently, amongst our listeners. There's been a battle here the first few weeks. I saw what you sent again this week. Very tough.
Yeah.
Very difficult. All my guys are clamoring for a vintage card, a 90s insert, and a basketball card, and you are just shunning them. Now, we have some interesting ones this week. The first is a 2007 Exquisite Basketball Foursomes Patches Gold 1/1. Okay, and it's just a beautiful design. The four players on this card are all Lakers legends: Kobe Bryant, Jerry West, Magic Johnson, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. If you're a Lakers fan, this is a must-have. It's a 1/1. I know you're a diehard Lakers fan, Jesse. Magic Johnson, Kobe are your favorite basketball players, I believe. I'm going to put you on the tee box first. Tell us a little bit about this card. Give us your magic number and where this ends. And just a reminder for all the listeners, PWCC's weekly auction closes this coming Sunday, November 6th.
And this card's in it.
Yes.
Look, I am in love with this card, and that's why I selected it. So I don't get a bid on anything that we auction. And so I, unfortunately, this is a card that I would 1,000% just win. I kind of don't care what it costs. I'd win it. It's not very often in our space you have a team that has a fan base like the Lakers do and get the four greatest players of all time in a Lakers uniform to be on the same card and have them all be game-used jerseys. I mean, it's really hard to find that. So the patches on some of these are incredible. We have multiple three-color patches. I think Jerry West might be another. Magic and Jerry have two colors, but
yep. Kareem and Kobe both have three.
Yep. Which it's an incredible card. It's graded a BGS 8. It's a 101. It's something that I would love to have in my collection, and I might, you know, have to try to buy it from whoever the hell wins it or something like that, because I just can't buy it. But this card, I believe, is going to do a really good number. It's sitting at about $1,300 as we shoot this. I've got this card going for $9,300, and that might be a little conservative.
Wow, that is interesting. So this is the second year Exquisite did this foursome gold set.
Yep.
The first year was 2006. There has obviously been a ton of great Exquisite pieces that have come to market recently. Unfortunately, guys are selling for less than they purchased it for, and we thought maybe the bottom was in last week. It doesn't appear to be the case. But for a one-of-one that likely won't surface again, it could be the right time to buy the dip here. If you're a super collector of the Lakers or any of the four players mentioned, this one's for you. Game used, as you referenced, very strong future. I think that market over the next 3 to 5 years, we know as price ranges increase, the pool of buyers shrink. Guys are a little bit over leveraged, but I think the pool of buyers is decently sized in this price range due to the brand, due to the players, mm-hmm. due to the teams. I am actually very close to you. I sent some feelers out because I had no idea. So
like
I
always,
I got to send some feelers out. So, you know, talk to JB, talk to Mike, you talk to a couple of those guys who are in the Exquisite market, who are in the Kobe market, and mm-hmm. they are actually very close to you. They told me to go $8,800 on this one. But I think they what they said to me was there's a very good chance if two guys get involved, it could go for 11 or more is what
you,
they said.
You heard what I said, right?
Yes.
I said, if I could bet on this, I would win it.
Yes.
So
yes.
That means that numbers don't really, obviously everyone has a threshold, but I could see this going for 12 to 15 if a couple guys
get
a hard on for it. Yep, that's it. That's all that you need is two guys. And so, yeah, it's an interesting card, hard one to price, but I guess we're kind of in the same ballpark, so we're almost at an over-under at about $9,000.
Yes. Yep. I think that's probably the right point. And again, it's just let's see who comes to bid on Sunday evening, and you guys can track it at pwccmarketplace.com. The next one to me is very interesting because it combines modern with the GOAT, which is really interesting. And just to keep things fair, there's only two copies of this card in PSA 10. It's a 2013 Select Concourse Green Prism Tom Brady, numbered to 15 copies. Relatively important set. 2013 is the first year of modern Select football. The Select brand kind of gone for about two decades, and this was the return to football. We're talking about the GOAT, Tom Brady. Now, modern stuff has started to dip, obviously. Mm-hmm. Brady hasn't performed to his usual level with the Buccaneers at 3-5. And, you know, Tampa and Tom don't come with a ton of market speculation because the idea of making another Super Bowl run isn't there right now. And listen, some of the guys around Tom, you just lost Shaquille Barrett, tore his Achilles. He's, you know, Buccaneers lead pass rusher. So, again, to keep this fair, I will go first. I think specific to Tom Brady, his market's down about 35% over the last 6 months. I did see this card sold privately at PWCC about 6 months ago for a five-figure number. Mm-hmm. I'm coming way down here. I'm going to be at $5,412 on this one.
trading cards and memorabilia have seen incredible growth as an alternative investment. The company leading the growth? PWCC Marketplace. PWCC Marketplace runs the largest weekly auction of authenticated sports cards, Pokemon cards, comic books, video games, and memorabilia in the world. PWCC Marketplace also has more than 65,000 items listed in their fixed price marketplace that you can make an offer on right now. Head over to pwccmarketplace.com and see why they're the best option for buying and selling trading cards, memorabilia, and all of your collectibles.
We're actually pretty close in pricing on this one. Look, this card, it's cool because it's only numbered out of 15 and it's a pop 2. So, you know, there's only two that have ever been graded PSA 10, but it's kind of a unique subset. And so I picked this one because I thought you could go the other way with it. I thought you'd see the private sale. Maybe you'd be a little more bullish on it, but
you're trying to pull the old rope-a-dope.
I kind of did. Well, you're crowdsourcing all your stuff now. So I figured I'd try to pull one over on you, and apparently it's not working.
You're the guy picking the cards. That's a built-in advantage.
Well, look, I've got this thing at 5,800. So we're pretty close to the same number. This is one of those cards that's interesting because, as you know, in this modern space, even for a guy like Brady, who's the GOAT and his legacy is cemented, when you're actively playing, it still is what have you done for me lately, right? People still look at the potential for him to win another Super Bowl or an MVP or whatever, and they weigh that with his card pricing. Which is kind of silly for somebody like that. And I think it's really silly that a lot of LeBron stuff's come down as much as it has because of who LeBron is and what he's already done. But they're looking at the struggles when a guy's 38 years old or when a guy like Brady's 45, and they weigh that in their card market, which is it's kind of ridiculous. But anyway, I got this one at 5,800. So once again, we're pretty close on the numbers, and there's not a lot of sales data here. So it is funny that we're both in the 5K range.
This required some manual tweaking for sure because I saw the data point at 10.5 and I started doing some due diligence there. And my initial thought was based upon where the Brady market is, and he's down, like I said, about 35% over the last 6 months or so, it would put you at about $6,500. But, you know, we've seen a little bit of a dip. It is this modern day card of Brady, and those have seen a little bit further of a dip. So this one's going to be really interesting because somebody might see that last comp that you referenced and bid that high.
Sure.
Or this
sure.
might fall completely flat and we both could look stupid, right? So this one
could
really
yeah. But I want to be clear. I actually do kind of like this one if you're gonna hold it for a while. I just think that low numbered inserts of the GOAT when you're not in the middle of a season when he's struggling are going
first
to make a run
product.
Up again. Yeah, there's not a lot of pop two Brady inserts out there. So you're looking at a card that's, you know, it's just rare. And I think that if you're willing to hold it for a bit, I think you can do all right on it.
You're doing the sell job to get this thing over 5,800.
Oh, God, here we go. Here we go.
Unlike Tom Brady, there's some Super Bowl hype surrounding this particular quarterback. The Bills were the odds-on favorite to win the Lombardi Trophy to start the season. Buffalo is still the favorite at 3-1 after dismantling Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers on Sunday Night Football. The final card we're going to put a magic number on is the 2018 Panini stained glass gold prism Josh Allen rookie, numbered to just 10 copies in gem mint condition. Talk to us a little bit about this one, Jesse.
Well, I think this card is a good example of why we can't give you a roadmap on how to succeed in this place, in this market, is cards like this. I mean, here's a card. It is a stained glass insert. It is gold, which is another variation, and it is a mojo. So it's like, you know, there are all these variations and all these different kinds of trading cards out there. And so it is so difficult to talk about the market and tell someone what to buy. Like, this is a unique asset, but it's a Beckett 9.5. It has amazing subgrades. So it's what we call a gem plus. So it's 3.95s with a 10 surface subgrade. It's numbered out of 10. It's a population one of one. There is one BGS10, I guess, out there, but it is a really, really pretty card. I mean, it's gold and it's got the mojo look to it, which is kind of a design, and then it's got this stained glass feature to it. So it's a really pretty card, aesthetically pleasing. It is a rare Josh Allen rookie, which, look, I made a comment on Instagram the other day that I thought Josh Allen was the best quarterback in football. And I still believe that, which is crazy because as a Duck, I watched him play against us when he was at Wyoming, and I thought he was awful. So I did not think he was going to be a good pro. Sure enough, the guy is an absolute stud. I'm falling in love with him as a player. I mean, look, he and Mahomes are, you know, call it 1A and 1B as far as the best quarterbacks in the league go, but they are a fantastic team. He's a fantastic player. Really cool, rare rookie card. I've got this thing at 15,200.
That's interesting. So Josh Allen, to your point, is playing out of his mind. We understand that he's got an arm cannon, and he's also big and strong and fast enough to become that added rusher that just gives pass rushes an absolute headache if they get too far up the field. Josh Allen right now, the even money favorite to also win NFL MVP. He's playing well. Sometimes team performances help enhance an individual's play. And we know Buffalo went all in and loaded with talent, and they might not be done yet, potentially trying to make a play for a couple running backs. Now, Josh Allen isn't playing like the best quarterback in the NFL. He's actually fourth in defensive adjusted value over an average quarterback right now. And this might shock some people, but Tua, Mahomes, and wait for it here, Jesse.
Jimmy G, really ranked better.
Than Josh Allen in that metric. In terms of QBR, Tua is number one, and then Allen and Mahomes are tied for second. But specific to this card, it's a Josh Allen rookie that's gold, you mentioned, number to 10, so you get some of the 90s insert guys that might have a feeling about Josh Allen, maybe enter this market a little bit. There's a premium that comes attached with gold in a card to 10, and we are getting to that point in the season, week 9, where we can see the path to a Super Bowl. Right now, the AFC would run through Buffalo, who has a great home field advantage. The Bills' remaining schedule grades out the 22nd toughest, so quite manageable. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with $16,517 on this one. When I'm looking at Josh Allen, it's going to sound pretty crazy, but there was a comp recently that was actually higher than both of our guesses here. And Josh Allen's market's actually up about 17% over that time. Even though it's a down market, the Josh Allen hype is real. So it wouldn't shock me if this exceeds both our numbers, but I'm going to be at 16,517 on this one.
All right. I guess we shall see.
We shall see. And now when we go from one card that's numbered to 10, that leads us perfectly into our next segment.
Damn, that's a ghost. We're going to highlight a card that hasn't sold in more than a year right now, or is serial numbered to less than 100 copies produced. We're going to talk about why this card is significant, maybe in terms of hobbies or language or just the overall rarity of it all, and why it's considered a ghost.
Rare cards we like to call ghosts in this hobby, and this tickles my fancy when we start talking about cards like this. Yeah, I got a little, I saw the email come across. There was a little tingly sensation below the belt. I very much like this. We're going to talk about the 1997 Skybox EX 2001 Essentials Credentials Future Kobe Bryant to 73 copies. I'm going to let you talk about this great card first. I know you are a Kobe fan, a Lakers fan. Give it to us about the importance of this card.
Well, look, the reason that you love this so much is because you're a big 90s insert guy, right? So
I am.
The reason that 90s inserts are so important is what a lot of people don't know is that there were no serial numbered cards until 1996. So the market as a whole in trading cards has, you know, it's relied on the changes that were made in the 90s. And it was revolutionary for our space to do serial numbered cards and then do game use patches in them and on card autos and all these things. And the 90s, the mid to late 90s, shifted what our trading card market is today. So that's why some of these inserts that we talk about from the 90s are so important to our space and what it's become. So this 97 EX 2001 Essential Credentials Kobe is a future variation out of 73. There's actually what's called a now variation that's numbered out of 8, and it's incredibly rare, and it's a monster card. I don't know if one of those has ever sold publicly. I'd have to do some more research. But there has never been a BGS 9.5 of this card sell publicly. It is a pop three. There's none graded higher. There's only two PSA 9s that exist with no PSA 10s. It is a second-year Kobe Bryant card. And it for this card in a 9.5 to never sell publicly, it shows you the critical importance of this card and how collectors don't want to let them go. It's just, it's a very pretty card. It's kind of a bright, you know, pinkish red, and it's got a nice action pose from Kobe in a Lakers uniform with the number 8 on it. This Essential Credentials brand has lived on throughout the years, and they continue to make products referencing it or doing variations or throwbacks of it because of how important this brand is. And so a card numbered out of 73, never having a BGS 9.5 sell, is pretty incredible. So when we say it's a ghost, it is a true ghost.
My second favorite set, only behind the 1998 championship PMGs.
Another beautiful set. Yeah.
Specific to credentials, 96-97 was the first iteration. Kobe has the ultra popular rookie in there, numbered to 499 copies. However, this is the first year of essential credentials, right? 97-98, completely different design. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned within here two variations. You have the essential credentials future, the essential credentials now. And just aside from being aesthetically beautiful and the first of its kind, the credentials future that we're talking about is like this red, orange, pink with the glow edge stock. The credentials now has this green, yellow glow edge stock. And the serial numbering of these cards were great. They were the inverse of each other in each of the sets. So there were 80 total players in the set. The future variation of Kobe, to your point, is numbered to 73 copies, the 9 to just 8 copies. And you see that throughout the rest of the set where Grant Hill in the future, 80 copies. In the now, just 1 copy. So that became the ultimate chase for one Grant Hill super collector I know very well. The husband and wife team at Arena Designs really came up with a historic set, and not just due to the great design, but the thought process that went into the serial numbering was something never seen before. And this is just one of the most iconic sets. And it's not just basketball, right? Because we've seen it cross into other sectors. And kind of going back again to the top of this podcast, when I got back in, made my first purchase in 2016, 90s inserts were never on my mind. I stumbled upon a YouTube video with a 90s insert collector named Grant, and suddenly I said, I have to check if these cards are available for Derek Jeter. And the first time I started purchasing 90s inserts for Derek Jeter wasn't until 2019. So you talk about the maturation of collectors. You're going to find things that you didn't know existed multiple years down the line, and that may change your mind on how you want to collect and invest. And this is one of those instances for me.
Yeah, look, this is what we mentioned. When you get into the space, you might zig or zag. You never know which kind of little segment of the market it is you're going to latch onto. And you know, if you're new to the space and you're coming into 90s inserts, watch out, because they ain't cheap. because they're so important, they're so pretty, they're just so significant to the history of the space that they are not inexpensive. And I expect this card, I would say the over-under on this card is about $150. I think it could do $150,000, give or take. It's a big card.
Would not shock me. And you mentioned zigging and zagging. It's the perfect leeway to our next segment called This or That.
So we doing this or are we doing that? You tell me and we'll tell you. We're going to compare two cards right now with similar value that are completely different. Let me give you an example. Let's just say for argument's sake, you have a vintage Mickey Mantle baseball card worth $30,000. But you also have a modern day Joe Burrow rookie card worth $30,000. Which one would you rather have and why? You tell us, we're going to tell you right now.
I like what you did here. You went back to Old Faithful. You gave us two cards with the same player, but just wildly different brands, wildly different sets, wildly different beliefs among collectors. And the two you gave us, the first being the 1989 Fleer Basketball Michael Jordan PSA 10, the most recognizable rookie card of the most popular athlete of all time. My mother, who doesn't collect cards or never really looked at a card, could point this out in a lineup. The second is a 2006 exquisite collection Michael Jordan and LeBron James patch auto to just 23 copies in a BGS 9. You don't have to debate who the GOAT is. They're both on this card. Tell us which one you like and why, Jesse.
So this one is interesting because, you know, when you're looking at investing specifically, there's different theories of thought. You can go with commodities that over time have more sales data and might be easier to predict, or you can go with pure rarity that has, you know, demand and pent up demand, and you could get, you know, higher multiples on your ROI. So when I'm looking at these two, they're really polar opposites, which is really interesting. So I'll run through the 86 Flair Jordan, like you mentioned, most recognizable card in our entire space. Everybody and their mom knows what it is. It's a key commodity and a blue chip card. This thing got up, I think we had a sale just around 800,000 during kind of the peak of our space. It was a beautiful copy, yes. Maybe the best PSA 10 I've ever seen. But even some lesser copies sold at the peak around 720,000. You know, now these cards are trading at around 200K, give or take, depending on condition. And so they've had quite a bit of pullback. You know, there are 320 of these graded PSA 10. So there is a good amount of supply. But I know people that have multiple copies. I know people that have double-digit copies. So the supply isn't really 320 per se. It is much less, but they get traded quite frequently because of the volatility these cards have had. Some guys are in it for cheap. Some guys are in it for a lot. But there's been a changing of the guard a bit, and I expect these to slow down from a turnover perspective here pretty soon. I also see these 86 Fleers being like I mentioned, a key commodity for what I believe will be quite a few funds that are getting created for the trading card space. And I believe that these funds will, you know, they'll want cards like the 86 Fleer Jordan, the 52 Mantle, you know, 33 Gaudi Roofs, and those kind of blue chip pieces to create a steady ROI for their investors. And there's going to be a lot of funds coming out. They're going to need to buy this piece up, and then it's going to be less available because those are in what we call strong hands, where the card's not going to move as much. You look at the 2006 Exquisite, dual auto, Gamey's patch, out of 23, Jordan and LeBron. It is just a complete opposite contrast. It is. There's only 23 made. Like I mentioned, it's a Gamey's jersey. It's a beautiful, I mean, three-color patch. This thing... It might have been, we just sold this card this last auction. It sold for $186,000. And for example, the Jordan did sell for $180,000. So they're very close in price. But this is one of the better jersey patches I've seen in these numbered pieces inserts that we're talking about from Exquisite, where it's a smaller window for the actual patch. So getting three color for each respective player is pretty difficult. But it's an on-card auto. It's a Beckett 9, so it's great. It's great, a BGS 9, but really, like, this is the kind of card where you're talking about an argument that's made in barbershops, that's made, you know, in at the water cooler, who's the greatest of all time. And I think the majority of us will point to Jordan, but there are, you know, LeBron fans out there, they're going to scream LeBron from the rooftop. So having these two guys on the same card that are, you know, the most significant players from their era is really cool and unique, and there's only a limited number of these that exist. You know, Jordan's not signing anymore. LeBron's even limited to what he's doing because they're, you know, they're both with Upper Deck. So I think that these two cards, while they're completely different, they're both really interesting and they're both great investment pieces, to be frank. Now, I'm going to go with rarity on this one. I'm going to go with the 06 Exquisite, the dual auto, because
I like
of the pure rarity of it. Now, it was actually a difficult decision for me because I do believe long-term in the 86 Fleer Jordan, but this card is so pretty, and I'm a sucker for an on-card auto and a game-used patch, and a pretty patch at that, and these two on the same card, you just can't go wrong.
This is really interesting, and again, we didn't anticipate all of these segments within the show to lead back to the opening topic, but they really have. And, you know, we talk about this 1986 Fleer Michael Jordan. It's not just him, right? That set is legendary, and there's some quirkiness about that set, right? The collation is interesting, and similar to the 52 Topps baseball set we talked about in a previous podcast, where there were periods you couldn't give those boxes away. And there's interesting stories with players within that set, right? Johnny Moore and Jeff Malone, because that is a set that people want to collect, the entire thing. The Gem Mint populations on those cards are so small, it causes names like that to sell for more. But getting back to Michael Jordan specifically, there are 323 PSA Gem Mint copies right now. There's over 500 at BGS that are in Gem Mint. This tends to become a set where once it reaches a certain price point, people sell. And it does cause a lot of market volatility. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised you didn't think a little bit differently. But I'd rather have a really nice PSA 9 copy for low five figures that looks identical to a PSA 10 copy aside from the 2 cent piece of plastic holder from China. right. And I kind of Fair. Just gravitate towards a game used on card duel of Jordan and LeBron, the two goats. There's far less total game used on card autos of just Jordan and LeBron together than Gem Mint copies between the grading companies. It's more visually pleasing to me. I prefer to collect those kinds of assets, honestly. And specific to the card we're talking about, you hit it perfectly. It's numbered to 23 copies. Obviously, the same number Jordan and LeBron wore at that time. Both are three-color patches. It's just a beautiful card. Now, if you ask me which one has more financial potential, could be the Jordan rookie card because we've seen it reach 800,000. There isn't any data points that say this 06 exquisite is going to reach that number or has reached that number. And I'm comfortable with saying that this goes back to collect what you like. And yep. while there might be less return on the 06, it's something that I like. It's something that still has enough long-term potential for the portfolio, which I like. I do think before we leave, because you hit on something perfect and you hit on something that people are gonna be like, what the hell was that? Talk a little bit more about these potential funds getting into cards and keying on a key card like the 1986 Fleer Michael Jordan.
Well, yeah, I mean, look, in financial markets, you need to be able to track things with data. And so in any fund that's created, they're going to have a level of cards in there that are steady, that they know they're going to have a good solid ROI on, or they believe they are based on data that they have. And then they might throw some riskier assets in there. So, you know, look, both of these cards could end up in a fund. I mean, that's the fact. Now, the smaller portion of the fund is going to be carved out for cards like the Exquisite versus the card like the 86 Fleer, because we don't know the next time this Exquisite card sells what it's going to go for. It's a bit of an unknown because there's just less sales data out there. And also, there's less supply. So they're much more difficult to come by. They're much more difficult to count on. If you want to acquire a position as a fund in something that is a commodity, well, you need supply on the market. And, well, what is 86 Fleer Jordan? There's, what did you say, 323 PSA 10s? Well, there you go. But you also made a comment about that I don't want to gloss over, because this is also a good educational piece for the pod, for those that aren't super familiar with our space. But you said you would rather pay $15,000 to $20,000 for a really nice PSA 9 of that 86 Fleer Jordan. Well, guess what? Me too. I wouldn't mind saving some money and buying a really nice copy, because the one thing that everyone needs to realize when you're looking at grading, it is a human being sitting at a table under a lamp assessing an asset. That human being could be having a good day, and that human being could be having a bad day. And there is a bit of unknown and uncertainty around the grade that is coming out of there. And that is just, it's human nature, and nothing is done on purpose or anything like that, but someone could be having a great day or a bad day, and it could affect the grade of your card subconsciously. So there are nines out there that should be tens. There are tens out there that should be nines. So you need to educate yourself on condition. And that is where, you know, we mentioned iAppeal. And if you look on our website under our tab for research, it explains what iAppeal is. You can go find that on there. And it gives you a little bit more insight into the condition of trading cards. But grading is subjective. Just keep that in mind when you are investing. And that's why ultimately, I think subconsciously, I chose just pure rarity from a card manufacturing perspective over grading rarity.
Make sure you follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. Subscribe to Bet the Board and get notified when new episodes of Cardboard Chat air on Tuesdays. And be sure to stop by pwccmarketplace.com for all your collecting needs.